204 DGS on KMOX. Happy Gloomy Friday to you. Wheels is doing the show from his home because his wife tested positive for COVID. And when Andrew found out, he took the day off. So I don't know what the connection is there, but he said he couldn't come in. So was Susan feeling bad yesterday, Wheels?
Not that I know of. I mean, she was at work all day yesterday. And then I got home late from the concert last night, and she texted me that she was not feeling great. But then this morning took the test, and it was like, well, that explains that.
So you'd never seen Megadeth before?
I had never, man. So, you know, obviously they've been around for 40 years. I've always listened to their stuff. I was not as big into them as I was into some of the other heavy bands at the time. Like, there's the big four, right? It's them, Metallica, Slayer, and Anthrax. They were kind of like the big four, you know, thrash bands at the time. I was more into Anthrax, Metallica, but Megadeth was really good, man. I mean, like, really tight musically. Like, the show was fantastic. Dave Mustaine can still play, and he's not a, you know, he's not a screamer, Dave. Mm-hmm. He's more of a growler, so he still sounds good.
Where was the show?
It was at Hollywood Casino, which, by the way, I hadn't seen this there before, but I was there with our buddy Ben Boyd.
Yeah.
He and I are concert buddies, and I'd never seen a show there where they didn't sell the lawn. Like, there was nobody on the lawn, but it was packed otherwise.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That was a great show, man.
When you
right
said Hollywood,
down, we're right down in the second row.
When you said Hollywood Casino, my band used to play in Hollywood Casino, and I'm like, wow, Megadeth played that room? That's
yeah,
crazy.
They played it 60 people.
It's like 200 people. Razor's Edge?
Yes. Okay, I have a couple of things I want to talk about. Most of them are my social media habits here, but let's start by talking about Gen Z. Gen Z apparently doesn't want social media, according to a new survey, even though they use it constantly. And I totally get that. I am on my phone all the time. And lately, I've been wondering to myself, what would your mental health be like if you weren't always looking at this stuff? If you weren't always on X, if you weren't always on Instagram, if you weren't always, you know, just running to Reddit to look something up at any point, what would your mental state be like? And I think my mental state would be a lot happier, but it's very intimidating to think of giving those things up.
Give me the order of difficult to give up.
It'd be really hard to give up all of them because they're all time wasters for me. Mm-hmm. It's not, if I had like a full day, like for example, when I'm on vacation, I'm not like, I got to see what's going on Instagram. I don't feel that way at all. But when I have downtime, like while I'm on vacation, if I'm traveling or something, mm-hmm. It's like, all right, let's see what's going on. So they would all be hard to give up and then replace with a healthy habit, like reading a book or like learning a new hobby or something like that. And I just think about how much time we all spend. You know, I don't know if you guys get this, but on Sundays, Apple will send me like, you spent 4 hours a day on your phone this week. You spent 6 hours a day. And it's like, what did we do before that? Yeah. What were we filling that time with?
Watching TV, most likely.
Yeah, that's a good point. But now it's like I'm watching TV and I'm watching my little screen at the same time.
Well, it's the filling of time in normal life. Like, we've always filled time when we're at home by ourselves.
Right.
But when you're sitting in a doctor's office or you're in an elevator, and I know you're not supposed to do this, but if you're at a stoplight in traffic, it's just automatic.
Yeah.
It just happens. Just next thing you know, you're looking at, for me, the only thing I have is TikTok. So I could give up social media pretty easily because I just have one thing, but that one thing would be tough to kick.
Yeah, I kind of want to challenge myself to do like a 48-hour fast because I think a week would be, honestly, I think
pushing
it would
it.
Be too hard. Yeah. But if I gave myself 2 days, you're not going to look at TikTok or X or Instagram or Reddit is a really tough one because I use that for like show prep and stuff too. But if I went like this weekend, for example, without touching it.
And I can tell you, and I think you guys will believe this because you're probably in the same boat. I don't love TikTok.
Yeah.
I don't crave TikTok. I don't think, oh, I wonder what's... I don't. It's just like Pavlov's dog, that it's images in front of me that change when I move my thumb. It's just that easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm more addicted to the changing images than I am any single thing on there.
I think that's what this survey is saying about Gen Z, too. Like, they don't have a positive affiliation with social media, a lot of these kids who are surveyed, but they're still sucked in all the time and use it all the time.
Well, Wonder Wheels, not so much our kids because they're a little older, but if the new generation, if this is something they'll turn around to their parents and be like, look at what you did to me. Like, you should have never let me have a phone when I was 10 years old and I had Instagram at 12 and you're terrible parents.
It's possible, right? I mean, you know, but did the TV generation do that? Because there was the big knock for a long time, like basically my generation, right? We were the latchkey kids who would come home from school and just watch TV for hours until mom and dad came home from work and it was time for dinner. And I don't know that there's been a big pushback on that, despite all of the things that people worried about. This is more intense, though. So, right? I mean, because you're interacting with it more and there's other human beings communicating with you. But you know, I think the downsides are all real. None of them bother me. Like, Twitter will piss me off sometimes because I see some dumb thing that Elon does or says. But at the same time, I would rather know that those things are happening than get blindsided by them at some point. Right? If I don't see it, then when am I going to find out? I'm going to find out when something big happens.
You'll get this, Wheels, and probably Rage 2. This is not really a knock on my parents, because it was their whole generation, but I learned almost everything I know from television.
Yeah.
Like, my parents did not sit me down ever and say, hey, look, just so you know. It was either I didn't get in trouble, which was just like, okay, you can just come have dinner.
Right.
But there was no like, and here's a lesson, boy. Or I got in trouble. And then it was, okay, you're going to get a spanking because you did this. And I'm like, okay, well, we'll put one and two together and I won't do that again. But all the life, I learned more from the Brady Bunch parents.
Well, and think about how much tighter a filter there is on the Brady Bunch parents than there is on the entire internet. So if the internet is raising your kids, what kind of weird propaganda are they taking in?
Let's just put a pin in that. What a great point. I was raised by homogenized, censored 1970s shows. And kids today have everything. Mm-hmm. Just the underbelly of the world.
They have Skibidi Toilet, for goodness sake. Yeah, what does that even mean?
I will say what it means. Dave, you know, like Nick and Shannon, my daughter Shannon, they're older, so it's a little different. Maybe it's more like this for Fee, but it means parents need to be more active.
Yeah.
They can't be passive like your parents' generation.
Yeah.
They can't be.
Because you can't trust that thing. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. How many times do you guys do this? Because I do this all the time. I will be doing show prep in particular, and I'll see an article that's like, the guaranteed secret to happiness is within this article. 3 easy steps. And I'm like, here we go. Like, my life's about to change.
Yeah.
And then I'll click on it. And they take too long to get to the point that I'm like, oh, never mind. And then I just click.
Dude.
Just leaving the secret to happiness on the table.
The other day, this one's like that. The other day, I was looking at a TikTok, and it was one of these flying wing guys. You with me? Like, they jump off of mountains, and then they just fly. And he goes, I'll guarantee you something. I won't be more than 1 foot away from the jagged rocks this entire time. And I'm like, scroll.
Not interested.
I wasn't interested. This guy's going to rub his nose on the cliffs. And I'm like, see what's coming next. And it just hit me. I wrote down, I'm like, what's wrong with you? Like,
okay, this is my last thing that I had that I wanted to talk about on the edge. And I'm embarrassed by it, but I want to know if you guys think it's as weird as maybe I think it is. I have always been okay with videos of people eating. I don't have what's it called that Phoebe has?
Misophonia.
I don't have that. In fact, sometimes I kind of like the eating videos. Well, now I've gotten to the point where, like, on TikTok especially, they're just showing me, it's called a mukbang, like where you just eat a large amount of food at one time. And I really, really enjoy watching them. And I don't know what this says about
me. I'm not trying to be stupid. I know there's a sexual thing about this. Is it like that?
No.
Like what they're presenting you? Or is it just you're watching a dude eat ribs?
I'm usually just watching someone eat chilies and I really want the chilies. There's nothing sexual going on.
Why are they posting it? I don't understand why. They would think that you'd want to watch them eat.
Yeah, and why do I want to watch them? That's why it's weird. Yeah. It's like, what's going on here? What is going on in anyone's psychology that makes them go like, oh, I can't have that food, but I would like to watch you consume it.
Yeah.
And
I only like it when it's the really hot pepper challenge and they're all running around.
They're like crying.
Yeah.
I have always loved eating scenes from movies.
Okay.
Like,
so that's not that different.
There's something cozy about like watching someone drink coffee on a day like this mm-hmm. in a movie. I'm always like, oh, that looks good.
See, for me, it kind of started a couple months ago because I can't believe I'm talking about this. But Chili's released these mozzarella sticks. And like when you take a bite, there's a really big cheese pull. So people would like post themselves eating the triple dipper with the mozzarella sticks and the cheese pull. And I'm like, that looks so good.
Have you had it?
I have not. I have not. I meant to go to Chili's at the airport. We ended up not going.
I like Chili's.
I don't think I've ever been to a Chili's before.
It's quality.
But it's on my list ever since I've been watching all these videos. But yeah, I started watching those and then it was like the algorithm's like, oh, she likes watching people eat. And now all the time it's just coming up and I'm like, do I want to be this person that sits around and watches this all the time? I don't know.
I've stopped judging myself based on what TikTok gives me. I would just feel like a serial killer all the time. Like, every day is just like a cavalcade of, you know, like, I don't know why that guy's kissing that cricket's butt, but okay. They both seem to be enjoying it, so. On DGS and KMOX, so we intentionally don't talk politics very much here in the show. I don't like it, and it just pisses people off, and especially about Trump, because you got half the country who love him, half the country who hate him, but when stuff happens, you have to kind of acknowledge it. And every time Trump rolls out a new product, I think it's a fake. And I have to ask someone like Andrew, like, this is a hoax, right? And he's like, no, it's not. So now he's selling $100,000 watches.
That's correct.
35 days before the election to be president of the United States, he's selling watches.
Yep.
Seems a little weird.
Well, don't worry. You can get one for $500. But they go up to 100,000. There's a nice range. Something for everyone at the Trump watch store.
See, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to piss my Trump people off. All of this, take away January 6th. Take away everything else. I'm a big Mitt Romney fan. But if Mitt Romney were selling laser beam eyes, trading cards of himself, and watches, and shoes, I would be like, this guy's insane. I'm out.
Yeah. It's
guaranteed.
It's a fair opinion to hold.
Guaranteed.
I mean, it's quite out of the usual for a former president to be doing stuff like this, especially like when you said we're 35 days away from the election. It's quite odd.
I think a fair test would be if the person you don't like and will never vote for was doing it, would it bother you? Right?
What
like if you hate Kamala and she was doing this, she was selling products or, you know, they were putting out trading cards with stomping on her opponents. I think everybody who would vote for Trump would think it's ridiculous. Well, I mean, you got to apply the same standard to your own team.
Yeah. And on the other side of that, like I just said, but I'll say it again, if it was someone I really liked a lot, they would lose me.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Guaranteed.
100%.
Oh, well.
This shouldn't be like a sport, right? The expectation of people in these positions should be higher than it is for everyone else. So whether it's president, senator, House of Representatives, governor, doesn't matter to me. If you want those positions, you're supposed to be better than the rest of us when it comes to your behavior. You don't have to be, you know, better is relative, right? When it comes to your belief system or whatever, but you need to be above silly nonsense, and all of this stuff is silly nonsense.
Speaking of silly nonsense, I asked Rach this question today in the office, and she gave me a look like I was insane. I'll ask it of Wheeler, and you'll probably do the same thing. Have you seen the face next to the moon?
Not the man
in the moon.
Right. Now, I think I've seen this.
For me or TikTok search it or something like that. And look, I mean this. If there's anyone out there in the audience, this is driving me crazy because there is a face of a man that supposedly is showing up next to the moon. And it's like, here's one taken in Miami. Here's one taken in, Belvedere, Scotland. Here's one taken blah, blah, blah. And I'm not a stupid person. And I with my limited skills, could probably cut and paste something that made it look like that face next to the moon. But when you see it everywhere, Wales, it reminds me of a few months ago when they had the aliens at the mall in Florida.
Yes.
It's just driving me crazy because I don't want to be a rube and fall for everything you see on TikTok. But when you see it over and over and over and over and over and over again from people, I'm not saying that there's a guy's face behind the moon. I'm just saying, why is everyone saying that there is?
Okay, so I looked it up on Reddit, the Too Afraid to Ask subreddit, and someone said, is the giant face behind the moon real? There's a few videos circulating online from multiple different people that show a giant face with a crack on its skull, similar to a caricature of a Greek god peering from behind the moon. So that's what we're talking about, right?
Probably.
The top comment says, you can also find multiple videos online of Sonic the Hedgehog. This is just a hoax.
That's a good one. Like, what face would we be seeing?
Yeah, and then...
Who's up there floating around in space?
And then the face is very distinct. And then there is a guy who looks just like it. And he goes, for some reason, my face behind the moon. And I was like,
it's him. And he doesn't know why it's happening either.
If he doesn't know.
I don't know, man. There are some weird things happening in the world with what people see, and because I think there are I don't know what the videos are, Dave. I know that they, you know, they're from all over the world. I've seen some of them. I think we have to be a little more skeptical about photos and videos.
Yeah,
I mean, AI is so good, and it's not hard to do quick edits of things that you shoot on your phone. It's just not. I mean, do we really think there's a giant face man in space?
Maybe.
I mean, if you want to believe, it's probably
kind of cool.
I mean, it'd be honestly, that would be kind of scary.
I tell you this though, and you guys will remember this somewhere around the time when the big tall alien showed up at the mall in Florida. Mm-hmm. There were multiple like 3 or 4 nights in a row. Like, okay. Come on, bro. What is this in the sky? And I think I texted you, Rach, and I'm like, hey, sorry to bother you at home, but are we being invaded by aliens? Like, it really got me. I'm stupid.
Yeah, the thing that You're got me stupid. About the Miami Mall thing is, because I know Bayside really well. I've spent a lot of time there. We went there all the time in college. There are always thousands and thousands of people at that mall, and you're going to tell me nobody got a shot? Or that there aren't thousands of shots. I mean, like, the first thing people do for everything, from road rage to fights to whatever, is pull out their phone. And nobody pulled... two people pulled out their phone, and they got a bunch of shadows, is what we got on the videos.
I'm pretty gullible. I really am. Because I remember that night, and I guess I just want to believe. Remember thinking, like, the huge police presence. So it's either a mass shooting, and if it was, we would know about it.
Right.
Or aliens. And when they said aliens, I'm like, well, there you go.
Yeah, it turned out, didn't it, that they thought it was a shooting, but yeah. That there were teenagers shooting off fireworks?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
233 DGS, happy gloomy Friday to you. I'm digging this. I love it. I love everything about it. I'm so sick of the hot weather. I love the falling leaves. I wouldn't want it for more than a couple of days, but I'm kind of digging it today. George Mahey is here in studio with us. You're screwing me up because when I see George Mahey, it's almost the weekend.
Yeah, it is.
You're a 4 p.m. guy.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know what happened, but so the life has changed.
I'm just going to walk out of here when you leave. I'm walking out with you.
Please don't.
It's happy hour, whether I'm here or
right.
Here.
Exactly.
That's when it happens. And it's been that way forever and ever.
Forever.
So this is the first time.
I know.
Yeah. You got me out of bed.
I feel like you're in math class now or something. It's like, I know you got some stuff to talk about in my show prep today, though. I thought this was apropos. It says the average person has tipped 40 times when they didn't think it was necessary. And I thought about that, and that's pretty close. Like, I would say that's a pretty
Mine's
good.
About 400
Is
times.
It really?
Yeah. I just feel it, especially now.
Yeah.
I didn't mind, and I don't think anybody minded during the pandemic.
Yeah.
We were all happy, just happy that these people were working and happy to support them so they could work. But, oh my gosh, you know, you've read it all, tipflation, tip fatigue, tip duress. It's got all those names. And I read one of those articles, too, and everybody's saying, you know what? I've had enough. And they've just...
Killing the golden goose.
They've drawn the line. And, you know, the folks that are, you know, giving you a donut in a bag and wanting 25% extra, that those days are over. They're over with me. I you know, when I'm in the business and I think, you know, some people know who I am and they go, well, that's, you know, I'm sure I get some of those schmuck looks when I walk out. But you know what? You gotta make a stand.
Do you have a bright line test, or is it more of a feel kind of thing?
It's a feel kind of thing. I mean, it doesn't take much for me to tip, but on the other hand, if you're just going through the motions and it's your job anyway, and you know it's a scone in a bag, I don't think so. It's tough, but you know I make exceptions to that rule a lot.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So you wanted to talk about the most divisive cheese of all time?
It is. It absolutely is. It's like I don't know what, except for tipping. Provol cheese is the thing that
gets people riled up the most.
And it's, you know, it's one of those one side of the fence or the other. It's red camp, blue camp, and nobody's on the fence. You're either in the club or you're not. And I just think it's fascinating that people get so worked up over it. A guy named Adam Rothbarth, who's a former St. Louis and who now lives in Chicago. This happens every so often. You see a you know, Provol managed to make it on the pages of some national food mag. And it was Bon Appetit a couple years ago. And this time it was Food and Wine, which is a big deal. So everybody sees it. Everybody reads it. Everybody, I'm hearing from my friends across the country, you know, hey, Provol cheese, what do you think? And Adam is just a total fanboy of Provol. And anyway, it'll get the fires burning again. But you know, for me, and he just loves it, and that's all there is. And I now just think it was very convincing. But what I try to do, and I don't, you know, it's worked for me a little bit. I'm always this mediator. I like to try to make nice, and I'm a glass half full guy. It's like, okay, so you don't like Provol. Let's talk about this, and let me analyze this a little bit. And I will suggest that they try it on different things that they didn't think about before, not just on a pizza. I mean, if you put it on a pizza, that's fine. But if you're going to put it on a pizza, try it half Mott's, half Provol. Or even, you know, if you're making it at home, 70-30, that's a really good combination. More Mott's than Provol. Provol is a very strong cheese, and it's got a lot going on, and the Mott's has that nice stretch. And anyway, and I learned this when I was in the pizza business, that you can get a lot of converts that didn't like Provol. And all of a sudden, they go, you know what, this isn't so bad in limited quantities.
Is Provol a cheese, or is it a creation?
It's a cheese product. It's a creation.
Okay.
And that's why all the cheese, no, it's not real cheese. Well, okay, it's like a processed cheese, like American cheese. Yes, you're correct. But
to me, that was the only cheese I knew. I was 30 until I knew that there's something other than American cheese.
And I just think that you know, in different applications, it's quite good. I mean, I like it on salads. I like those Provol ropes.
Yeah,
but I don't like a lot of them. I don't like as many as they put on when I get it in these places. If they put on some more Parmesan and take off some of that Provol.
Is Emo's the only one that really leads with the Provol in town?
There's a lot of St. Louis style places that's their thing, and they think that's part of it, and it is. But again, I think it's just as much the thin crust and the sweet tomato sauce as the Provol cheese.
We like sweet in St. Louis.
We're a big
barbecue,
sweet town.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do sweet and red and more sweet.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that is, but when in doubt, throw some sugar in it. Throw some brown sugar in it.
Right.
Throw some honey in it. But, you know, I'll throw Provol. I've done this before, too. Put some in a cream soup. And not enough just so people know it's there. But, man, this is darn good cream soup. Or a cream-based, pasta sauce. And it just adds a little bit of something. And if you can taste it, you've put too much in, like many a spice, right?
Wheels, where do you come down as a Detroit boy?
Oh boy!
Yeah.
I know what he's going to say. Here it comes.
I'm good with Provol on a salad, and it's actually good on sandwiches too. Like I've had plenty of really great sandwiches, whether it's from the Hill or just at stores or whatever. I don't like it on pizza though.
Yeah,
this is the outsider speaking, right? It's just it's the wrong texture for pizza.
that's why this 70-30, because it's got a good. I mean, the taste is good, but it's all of it. It's just too much for me. And again, I was part of the emo, you know, I was a franchisee, yeah. so I have to watch what I say. And I love an Emo's Pizza, but done the way that I like it. But I did this one time, and I do it actually all the time. I will take some garlic cheese bread and make, you know, a little cheese, you know, the topping with some Provol and some different cheeses and kind of create this slab of garlic cheese bread and then make this giant, you know, pot pan full of scampi and dump it over it. And that's the entree. I've presented it at dinner parties and never not want, I mean, everybody says, this is the best thing I've ever had.
How about that?
What kind of cheese is this? And then I tell people it's got Provol in it. And it's like people are like running for the bathroom. Like, it's this horrible thing.
I don't think I've ever asked you this in the 20 plus years we've known each other. Are you a good cook?
Yes. Yeah. And I say that just because I was forced to be, but you pick it up with 30 years in the business. Somebody hurts himself on the line. You better know how to make salads or flip that saute pan or cook a steak or something's going to happen. Something bad's going to happen. I'm a good electrician and I'm a good plumber too.
A meal should be delivered soon.
Yeah. Where did you hit your ceiling on cooking? Like, if you were with Gerard and you were cooking together and you can hang with him through the appetizers, you can hang with him through a steak, at what point do you go, I'm out?
I can hang through most of it, but a lot of the creativity and the conceptualization and putting this ingredient with that green ingredient, I don't know where, you know, what planet you were on when you thought that up, because I could have never thought about that. But it's those creations that chefs do that they're, I don't know, sitting around nights and going, yeah. You know, I don't even know how they do it, but that's what makes them the creative geniuses that they are. I'm really intrigued by this.
Going to a run-of-the-mill restaurant and going to like a Gerard Craft restaurant, I get that they're different. I get that Texas Roadhouse is different from Capital Grill. Does it really, what is it mostly? Is it mostly the food the sous chef puts in front of the chef, or is it the chef's hands and brain?
I think it's the guys that are making the food. I don't care how good that chef is. If you don't have the second in command or the guys on the line doing it exactly the way he wants it, then it's not good. And, you know, and I rate places that way too. It's like if Texas Roadhouse is doing a really great Texas Roadhouse thing, I think it's wonderful. High marks.
You don't expect them to be Ruth's
Chris
or Capital Grill.
No, you know, if it's the best Denny's experience I've ever had at a Denny's, high marks. And the same thing. I mean, the bar gets raised to different levels for different places, and that's why it's hard, but we do it anyway. You know, we'll do the 100 best restaurants, and we'll compare a Tony's, you know, to a fast casual place. And it's like, how can you do that? Well, because that fast casual guy is
what they're doing.
He's doing it right. And people have a hard time. What do you mean? Balkan Treat Box is better than Tony's. Well,
yeah,
it is. And it isn't, you know, you just have to keep that in mind. And some people just can't, and even restaurant
like
owners have a hard time.
What I do is very different from what Mark Cox does. It's very different from what Courtney does. Very different from what Rizzuto does. But we're all kind of doing the same thing.
No, y'all get lumped in the same.
Yeah, we're all competing against each other. Yeah,
yep.
Exactly.
So yeah, Provol cheese and, you know, I buy it. I've gifted it to people that we've talked about this before. When Andrew Zimmern,
yes,
came to town, I got to interview him, which I was very, I told him a bunch of places to go, and all of a sudden mm-hmm. his people go, hey, this guy's a pretty nice guy. You know, we need to do something for him. So I got to interview him, and I brought him a 5-pound block of Provol cheese as a gift from the city.
Yeah.
And he knew what it was.
Yeah.
And he just kind of, you know, gives me
recoiled
one of these,
a bit?
Yeah, a bit. He's on his heels, and he's like, I've got this picture
this
of him
going. This guy's made his living out of eating weird food.
I know. That's why I thought it was great. And then, and he just looked at me, and he kind of nods his head like, okay, wise guy. And he gave it to one of his people. He said, go put this in my car, because I know it'll keep.
That's funny.
It was a 90-degree day.
Going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more with George Mayhee from St. Louis Magazine. He's going to talk about the best quiet restaurants in town. 249 DGS, top of the hour. Dave Murray's going to be here live in studio. He's in town to do the Evolution Festival, to do the meteorological work. Well, I didn't think I'd get that word out. And it was a little thick in my mouth there for a second. Wheels is at home because his wife Susan tested positive for COVID. And so we're going to get him back on Monday, hopefully. George Mahey's here from St. Louis Magazine. So quiet restaurants. And I was telling you, this reminds me of, I don't know how many years ago it was, 15, 20, that we Googled dark restaurant and Paul Mono's came up. And we pulled into the parking lot and it was next to a Nails place and a Goodwill. And I'm like, let's just get the hell out of here. And I'm like, no, we're already here. Let's go. And it is now my favorite restaurant.
It's the perfect, the quintessential don't judge a book by its cover restaurant. It's so humble from the outside. And it hasn't really changed.
No.
It still looks the same way.
Same.
And it's still as good as it ever was. And it's one of those quiet, romantic places. And I get that's this question a lot.
I bet.
More and more and more. You know, where's the best food? Yeah. Where's the best service in town? Sure. But there's more complaints about noise. I love that place, but it's too loud.
Yeah.
That's a great place, but I can't hear myself think.
Yeah.
And I get this a lot. And so I decided to put a little article out and I said, okay, I'm going to, you know, pick, you know, I kind of drive the streets. That's how I do this, how I make my list. I go up and down the streets.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's the only way I know to do it. And so anyway, I put a list together, but I'm sure there's a lot more that I asked readers to chime in, but you know, it shouldn't surprise you that the quietest places are these most expensive steakhouses.
Yeah.
Right? The Flemings and the Capital Grills and the 801 Chop House and Fish.
Do you remember the Cattleman's Company?
I remember the name. I don't know that I ever went there.
Okay.
But, you know, we're talking about Annie Gunn's in the break. Not the quietest restaurant unless you're in one of those snugs.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's really quiet.
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned that. You know, the Dominic's and the Charlie Gito's on the Hill, those are biggies. But I mean, you can kind of beat the system a little bit by dining early or dining earlier in the week. Don't go on a Thursday, Friday, or Saturday because that's when everybody's out there. And you know, if you go at 5:30 or 6, if you can get out there to do that, chances are you can get your meal in. You know, actually it's more like 5 now because a lot of people are eating earlier, but you know, you can find sometimes a side room. Look for the small rooms. Look for the rooms that have a lot of space in between the tables. There are ways to you know, to beat the system. But boy, I talked to restaurant designers all the time, and I said, why don't you guys design quieter restaurants? And they said, because the owners either don't want that. They say they do, but they really don't because they don't want this kind of funeral home vibe going on in there. Or, you know, it's just it's the acoustics and all the noise dampening things are the first things to get cut out of a budget. I didn't learn that a long time ago.
Makes sense.
You know, and it's like we can do that later.
You really never get back to it.
No, you either don't get back to it or it doesn't work when you
Rachel, most of the restaurants in Japan quiet because the people are quiet?
I mean, it's not like I was hitting up like all the hottest spots, but I mean, yeah, it wasn't like loud.
It's different. I would think the dining culture is just completely different over there.
You don't tip, and it's considered very insulting to tip, actually, because the implication is like,
nice.
I have to give you more money so you get better at your job. So should never leave a tip like under any circumstance. It's not
Does
good.
Does it seem to be built in?
No. I mean, yes and no. I don't understand like how things are priced at restaurants because I've never worked at restaurants, but you can get a great meal and then you also don't have to tip on top of it.
Wow. It's wouldn't that be wonderful?
And I just think that is not going to happen in the U.S. in our lifetime. As much as I hope it will, I just don't think so. And everybody go, yeah, I would tip, you know, I would be fine with raising the prices and not having to tip until you see those prices go up 20% and you go, and all of a sudden things change. You go, you know what, I'm not even going to go out anymore. This is ridiculous. I can't afford it. Anyway, I just think it's in our brains to tip, and I
what would you
I
have to pay like a Capital Grill top server for a salary if you weren't going to tip? Are those guys knocking down six figures sometimes?
Yep.
Wow.
The best ones at the best places are, and again, you got to work long hours. It's hard physical work. You know, your day off, you're sitting there with your feet in the bathtub full of ice cubes, you know, because it's hard on the body. But yeah, a good server at even a mediocre restaurant can make a lot of money, especially now because there aren't as many of them. The stations are a little bigger. You've got an extra table or two. These guys can easily knock down $300 and $400 a night, which is... Dave's going
cash a lot of times.
There you go. Second job. Yeah.
And hasn't the tipping expectation kind of shifted from it was once 15 was nice. Now it's like, 20 is kind of the lowest you should go. Haven't sentiments kind of changed in that sense?
As much as, I get that a lot. What's the right tip? You know, what should I do? And I hate to say it, but 25% is starting to become the new norm if the service is good. I mean, service has to be good to leave that. It's just like 20% used to be. So, and I hear folks, leaving 30%, and that's just a lot. By the time you put tax on there, you're at 40% more than what you ate and drank. That's a big number. How's that for a downer, boys and girls?
Yeah, man, on a day like this.
It's just what we need.
All right, thanks, George.
Yeah.
Have a good weekend.
That might be it for me.